This is episode 3 of Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC. It's a place that helps people and businesses tell their stories. We do that by having a public production studio that allows for the creation of podcasts and videos. Oh my God, shoes. Listen, I have to admit it, I've never been a shoe guy. I just get ones that I think look passable and that allow me to walk on gravel without ouchies hurting my feet. But Stacey Robbins is a true artist. When I posted on the Media Lab Facebook page that I wanted to interview artists and entrepreneurs, she volunteered to come in completely trusting that I wasn't a murderer. Well, I showed her. No, nothing horrible happened. Stacey is the owner of Bigfoot Custom Shoes. She draws and hand paints beautiful artwork onto shoes that you can then wear. She's really good at what she does, and she has a remarkable story to go along with it. Because I didn't know anything about Stacey, everything was a revelation. This episode includes ADHD, kissing cow tongues, and living in the woods. Let's go and listen. So Stacey Robbins, thank you so much for coming and joining me here today.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. We already started talking a little bit before we push record here, and I'm finding some very fascinating things out about you. So I think...
Oh, just rip the box open and
yeah.
Let's get at it.
Rip that Band-Aid off. Let's start here. Where were you born?
I'm born and raised in Calgary. Oh. I'm one of those...
One
of those unicorns that don't seem to exist very much, but...
And what did your parents do?
My dad worked in oil and gas, mm-hmm. and my mom was the lunch lady at my junior high, and then she kind of stepped away from that and took care of the seniors and the kids in her life, so she's kind of in that sandwich role where she takes care of everyone.
Right, yeah.
But she does a very good job.
I bet. I mean, it's. I don't know, how did you feel being in junior high and having your mother in school at the same time? I'm sure that's a different feeling.
It was good and it was bad, but it was good because I got all the good desserts. And so my right. lunch was already made. I didn't have to pack a lunch or anything.
Right.
So
there's no way you forget your lunch because you know your mom's has your back there.
Yeah, but I also had to work in the lunchroom. So
really?
Yeah, so I was like a student lunchroom worker. Uh-huh. And then other kids would come get mad at me because my mom made them say please to get their food, which... I mean,
that's just good manners.
She'd be thanking them now. They'd be thanking her now, but yeah, at the time they didn't want to say please.
Well, I mean, that's their problem, I think, at that point.
Gail Robbins does not step down.
That's right. That's perfect. So I'm very interested here then because just knowing some of the jobs you've already held,
mm-hmm.
Did you go to university?
I did, yeah.
Where'd you go to?
I went to St. Mary's University College here in town.
I have a friend who's going there right now.
Yeah, when I was there, it was like, I think the goal we were trying to get was 500 students. So it was really small. And I think that was really good for me because I would have failed out if I went to like U of C and got lost in however many students they have over there. But at St. Mary's, I got to do sports and I was elected student council president.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had an office I could nap in. It was great.
Was that something that you were always trying to do, like even in high school, like doing extracurricular things?
Oh, yeah. I love helping people. So like if I can help someone out and join a club or make posters or anything like that, I'm all over it. So one of the big things that we were doing at St. Mary's at the time was trying to get the U-Pass for Calgary Transit. And so I was kind of the one that...
The spearheader of that?
Yeah. And we got it. My last day as student council president, we got it. And it was like the biggest fist pump ever.
Yeah, that's like that Hail Mary pass at the very end. It's like leaving on a good note so you can drop your mic and kind of
exactly.
Lead out. What was your hope by going to university or going to college?
Figure out what I wanted to do.
Right.
I honestly didn't even apply to university or college until I think it was after my birthday, April. So April of grade 12 was when I applied. And
was there any specific reason why you waited so long?
I was just, I don't know. I was pretty lazy. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was kind of in a fight with my parents to go to art school, and they didn't want that. And they were supportive. They wanted me to have an actual degree first. So.
And what was the degree that you were going for?
General studies.
General studies. Okay. You're a general studies major. That really is the path of the people. Like, I don't really know what I want.
Yeah. And then I thought I would become a teacher, mm-hmm. and didn't. On paper, I'm not a very good student. Gotcha. In real life, I'm a very good student, but on paper, I think it took some creative accounting to get me to graduate, and schools said not even to apply to become a teacher. So
wow, okay.
Yeah, so like don't even waste the paper.
Don't waste your time.
Yeah, we're not going to accept you. So that was a bit of a...
This pen is for winners, and I'm...
Yeah, yeah, and you are not allowed to touch it.
Right, right.
But that kind of led me... I was working at a summer camp during the summers, mm-hmm. and I knew I loved working with kids and being creative and stuff, and so... being the arts and crafts director at a summer camp was
the
perfect job for me.
Which summer camp?
Camp Kiwanis, just west of the city here.
Yeah. How many summers did you do that for?
That was 5 summers. And then I actually, that was my most recent job. I was the outdoor school director there. So okay. I lived and worked out there for 2 years.
For sure.
The outdoor school director. So most kids who grew up in Calgary have been through the outdoor school system and come to either Camp Kiwanis or Camp Chief Hector, and mm-hmm. they spend a week out there and have fun in the forest. So,
you know, I'm curious because I find when I talk to people when they go through university, there's you fall into one of two major camps, mm-hmm. which is that I learned all I needed to know in university. It was like I kind of probably could have figured all this out myself, but it kind of mm-hmm. focused me a little bit more.
Yeah,
I don't know which camp you fall into.
I absolutely think. Oh, a little of both.
A little both, yeah.
University was really good for me because I had gone basically until my third year undiagnosed with ADHD.
Oh, okay.
And so in my third year, one of my professors and one of my mentors, she said, something's really wrong here because you can come into my class, you can talk about anything until you're blue in the face, like you remember all the theories, but you can't write a damn paper to save your life. And I said, yeah. And so she encouraged me and I went and got tested. And within a semester, I went from academic probation to like my GPA jumped one whole grade point.
Wow.
Which was...
That's huge.
Though. Yeah. So that is what I take out of university. That is the huge sort of benefit that I got out of that was just knowing that about myself.
And well, kudos to that mentor to actually being able to see that and be able to tell you that maybe there's something we can...
Absolutely. And it was like, the more I read on ADHD after that, it was like, oh, this has not been... This is not a new thing. Like sure. that helping thing. And everybody thinks of the little boy kind of mm-hmm, hopping mm-hmm. around the classroom. But for little girls, it presents really differently. So the kid that always wants to help the teacher, that sure. can be a sign, the daydreamer. And so it presents in a lot of different ways, which is really interesting. But yeah, it was like this light bulb moment where it's like, oh, this is totally me.
How do you manage that now? Is this something that's like a prescription or is there something?
Yeah.
You know
so
you can
I am on medication right now. I took time off from medication for a while. Mm-hmm. The doctor I had before was kind of very old school in her thoughts of ADD. Mm-hmm. And she basically just handed me speed and said, do your best.
Sure.
And
what was this doctor's name, by the way?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, we don't want to go there.
No.
But it took away my creativity, that medication. Yeah. It took away all my out of the box thinking and I was getting the papers done, but I wasn't me. And so I didn't really enjoy being on it because it took away what I felt was me. And so I took 10 years off medication.
Sure.
And just recently came back to it. So
But is it now that you still feel like yourself even when you're on medication?
I do, yeah. There's some new generation of drugs that have come out. And so the old one is kind of like really quick uptake and mm-hmm. then a really sharp drop. So gotcha. You take the pill and then you're like ready to go like 20 minutes later and you go for 9 hours and you have your focus and then you just drop off basically a cliff and then you crash. This one is a lot slower to start up and then you get a longer focus time and then it's a gentle crash into bed crash, at the end of the day. So it's been really working and being an entrepreneur, it's really helping with the business side of things and getting on top of that because I can sit and hyper focus on painting for 14 hours, not eat, not drink anything.
Right.
But doing the business side always kind of gets ignored. So,
well, yeah. And I mean, especially as myself being a new entrepreneur, I find this a lot of the time where there's like 20 things that need your attention. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly going by and you, like, you have to focus on them one at a time or else nothing really gets done.
It's there's always a to-do list I find that's just long. Like, I'm launching a website and I have to, and then you have to like break those steps down. And
yes,
it's there's a lot of things to do. So yeah, solidarity.
Yeah, absolutely. So you graduate, you're still working at the summer camp at that point. Do you know where you want to point your ship then at that point?
So working with kids, I got a full-time job with the city of Calgary.
Okay.
Doing after-school programs and coordinating that, doing cooking programs with kids, and did that for a couple years. And actually left that job on stress leave and then was watching the Vancouver Olympics.
Mm-hmm. And, so 2010.
Yeah, 2010. And decided that I was going to be a reporter. I wanted to be there. I wanted to tell those stories. And there was a lot of really powerful stories in the Vancouver Olympics, like Alex Bilodeau and his brother. That was like right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And there was just a lot of really impactful stories. And I think the state of mind I was in, I was just sitting on my couch, just, this is just so beautiful.
Right.
I need just to
like
be there.
Crying, like eating chips.
Yeah.
Was it the stories themselves, or was there an actual reporter that you were drawn to as well?
I think it was the stories. Mm-hmm. I've always just been really drawn to people's stories, and people have been drawn to telling me their stories. And it kind of, at the time, seemed like a really snap focus. Like, it just kind of went, oh, yeah, like, this is what I meant to do. I taught myself to read by reading the newspaper. Like, I saw my dad reading the newspaper every morning, and that's how I started to read. And, like, we used to go to the Stampede, and when Channel 3 had Broadcast House down there, they used to set up there. That was my favorite part of the Stampede. Like, I couldn't care about the roller coasters. I just wanted to see how TV was made. And, like, the CBC used to have open houses, so that fascination was kind of like, well, let's do it.
No, it's so interesting. There's a couple things that are aligning with you and me, because same thing when I was growing up, is whether it was like the Olympics or any type of like sports or big presentation thing that was going on, I was so much more interested on like the people interviewing, like the people with the microphones, talking with the people. It's like, oh, I don't want to be a sports I don't want to be a sports player. It's like, I want to be the person who's like asking them questions.
Absolutely.
To the sports player.
Yeah, I either wanted to be the person asking the questions or the girl who brought the medal on the pillow.
Those were my two.
That's how I wanted to be involved. So
either of those two things, really.
Yeah.
So I'm like, where do you even start that path then? Like, for me, if I was like, I'm going to become a journalist right now, I'd be like, am I going back to school, or what do you do?
Mm-hmm. So I went back to school. I applied to SAIT, to the radio broadcast news, radio television broadcast news. So did the broadcast news stream and was there for 2 years. In between my first and second year, I spent a summer up in the Peace Region as the summer cruiser girl. So I got to drive around in an F-150.
Nice.
I felt like I belonged because my hatchback was not a Peace Region vehicle at all.
No, not really.
And that was kind of my first radio real life experience.
Yeah.
And working in the station, they did radio and television. So one of the reporters there said, let's do some TV. And so he knew I wanted to do TV, and he took me under his wing and let me go along with him on stories. And we just did lots of really fun stories. We did one on the Fort St. John zombie walk, which is still pretty legendary. We still laugh about it. And David Bell actually is in Calgary now. He works for CBC, and he's the one that kind of showed me the ropes up there, which was awesome. So
yeah. So what did you learn about yourself becoming a reporter?
That curiosity is a really good thing.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it seemed like asking questions, I'd get in trouble because I just wanted to know so much in school, and just like, well, why can't we talk more about that? Like, and like, let's like forget the timeline, forget the curriculum. Let's talk about this. This is really cool. You can be curious and still like, it's not a bad thing.
Tell me about the first time you're on television, like that red light goes on, you know, it's being recorded. What's going through your mind?
It felt great. Uh-huh. It was kind of like, oh, this is exactly what I'm meant to do. And we didn't do a lot. We did like some stuff reporter-wise in our first year at Say It, but that first time like doing a stand-up was, it took me about 25 times, but it felt really good.
But it becomes real then at that point.
Yeah, right? And then seeing it on TV, that's the part where you're like, oh, I did that.
Wait a second, that's me.
Yeah, I did that earlier today. I'm wearing the same outfit. It's really cool. And hearing myself actually... You know how Facebook gives you your memories?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So I guess it would have been just a couple of weeks ago that I had moved to the Peace Region, and I made a Facebook status from the Booster Juice because I heard my first radio cut-in, and it was like, I want to talk in a different voice when I order my smoothie because I'm currently on the radio, because like you pre-record it and then all that stuff. And so I had walked into the Booster Juice right as my voice came on, and I was like, and nobody else knew. So I was kind of having this moment where I was like, that's me. And like,
trying to drop that into conversation. Yeah. Oh, well, look at that.
Oh, have you heard about the Fort St. John Summer Cruiser? Like,
That's right.
That's me.
Any stories that you reported on that stand out besides, of course, the zombie walk?
There's some really funny ones. Yeah. One of the contests we ran, Kiss played in Dawson Creek that summer, that first summer. So they had like a, I don't know if it was like a fan poll or something, but they're basically like, tell us where you want us to go. And Dawson Creek won.
Wow.
So they played a show in Dawson Creek, and the radio station ran a contest called What Would You Kiss for Kiss? And it turns out people would kiss a stripper pole to go to Kiss. Which was one of my first experiences.
Sure.
So having to run this contest, being in Fort St. John for maybe 2 weeks at that point and getting the assignment, it was a rock station. It was like, oh, okay. And then like there was like a cow's tongue, like the promotions department came up with all of these things and I just had to do them. So I had to like hold this cow tongue while...
Someone
kissed it. And yeah, it was... It was a different world. That was formative, I'd say. Yeah.
It's like the first time I ever went to New York City. I only grew up in a very small town at that point. And I remember just getting off the bus. I'm like, oh, I am definitely in a different place right now.
Yeah, it was shocking, but it turned out okay.
Oh, sure. How long were you at the station for?
I did that first summer, and then I actually went back the next May, and then I was there up in the Peace Region for almost 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So working in TV and radio. And
what made you move on from that?
I got a job here in Calgary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I got a job producing the Kincaid and Breckenridge show and did that for 2 years. Everything happens. I've had to update my resume.
For sure.
And everything is in like these 2 year chunks.
All right. So every 2 years, it seems like you're moving on.
Yeah. I don't want it to be a red flag, but I feel like every 2 years, it's just like, all right, time to do something new. And I think it's maybe the ADD.
Maybe. It could be possibly. Yeah. I mean, definitely depending, I guess, on your age, you'll be very familiar with Kincaid, Roger Kincaid here. Mm-hmm. He was like the voice of Calgary for many, many years. What was your role there? Your producer?
Yeah, so I was the behind-the-scenes producer.
Gotcha.
And so I was finding content and tracking down guests and doing all the sort of busy work and working with Roger. And it was Kincaid and Kelly, and then it was Kincaid and Breckenridge. So working with the hosts and finding them all the stuff and pitching ideas and looking in dark corners of the internet. I had to talk I had to talk to the IT department a couple times and be like, no, legitimately, this is for a story. I cannot search for this with Safe Search on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like, this is an FYI. I'm going to be searching for some real weird things.
Yeah, you're going to see some things, and you're going to see some things like back to back that just shouldn't go together, but that's just the nature of it. That's just what I'm doing. So I guess give me a pass.
Was it a pretty collaborative environment there at the show?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was. We all brought ideas, and it was such a great environment to work in, and to have that where I was just as an important part of the team as the hosts. My voice wasn't on the radio, but like it felt like it wouldn't have happened without me. So
yeah,
and just made dear friends there. So
I bet.
Yeah.
So this is my question from that then.
Yeah.
What do you feel was your biggest success at that show that you're working on? And then follow up to that is, what do you think was your biggest learning piece from there?
I think that my out-of-the-box thinking definitely benefited the show. Just finding stories from different sources and different perspective than maybe the audience mm-hmm. generally would have had before. Finding unique guests and all of that kind of stuff. That was kind of like my biggest success. Again, like just kind of that confirmation that, oh yeah, like curiosity is a good thing.
No,
like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Like finding those cool things to talk about and doing that sort of thing, it really helps people. And I think we got a lot of feedback about some of those segments, and it was sure. like, yes, they were going to let me use the winner pen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this was like my moment.
The pen has arrived again, and now it's yours.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, you can waste our paper. And then the biggest learning, I think, is that you can't change people. Mm. The audience was very right-leaning mm-hmm. for the station, and for me, like, I just want to be like, no, there's a better world out there. Like, think of it this way. Like,
sure,
you know
sure.
what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And there was a few times where it was just like, we'd get texts and it was just like, just tell your producer she needs to get laid. And
ooh,
like,
boy.
She wouldn't be so uptight if she just got laid. And it was just like, that is not the basis of all my problems.
That's right. Like, that's right.
If you want to call me and we can have a genuine chat about my issues, that is not even one of them.
Right.
But it's, yeah, that just, you're not going to reach everyone.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or there are definitely people out there saying, you know what? Yeah, we're just not going to change each other's opinion.
Exactly.
On this. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what's after the radio station then? You worked there for a couple of years and
yeah,
then you move on to where?
That's when I went back to Camp Kiwanis to be the outdoor school director. So this position came up and kind of a dream position, creating this outdoor school has been running for 45 years now and mm-hmm. just being a part of it and knowing how many kids' lives it impacted and being able to change it and mold it and yeah. make it a really cool thing. So that was in the fall of 2015.
Okay.
That so I go back there.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, worked there, had a team of about 15 really great young people. And that was kind of the part I loved the most, was building my staff team. And
sure.
they were all really great and kind of being that mentor to them to create really good people. Mm-hmm. We had staff come in from around the world. So we had Aussies and Kiwis
oh, nice.
And
yeah.
people from England. And it was really fun. And like, I'd drive them to the mall on the weekend and they all called me mom and
right, yeah.
they'd embarrass me in the mall. Like, bye mom, we'll see you at 9. And just like these 19-year-olds
for
and
sure.
people wondering what happened there.
Yeah. We need some backstory mm-hmm, to this situation. Mm-hmm. You were essentially, though, their boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like then going into that sort of scenario where you were kind of the leader of the team mm-hmm. instead of maybe just being part of a team?
It felt really good. It felt like it was kind of like the launch. Like that was sure. that was where it was like, I've been building these skills and I've done them in some way. And now it's like, let's test how well we can do this. And I got to live on site. So I lived in the forest alone for 2 years and
yeah.
Walked to work every day. And I still forget that I have to drive places. So I left a little bit later than I should have today. But
that's fine.
But I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't just like take 15 steps and I'm at work. Like,
I know. It's like my dream that I want to work myself up to some year. You know, it's I think it's really inspiring to hear your passion behind teaching. I've been recently doing a bunch of research on this other podcast that I'm working on. And this person that I'm researching kind of said something similar where it's not enough to like gain all this knowledge about something and just keep it to yourself. Mm-hmm. Like there's something implicit in humanity that we want to kind of give that back and be able to teach that out to somebody.
Absolutely.
And teaching is kind of natural part of humanity to the next generation after us.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like it's kind of a thread that even though it's kind of these random, seemingly unrelated jobs, mm-hmm. that teaching element has always been there, whether it's, you know, showing people what's around them in the peace region, telling them the news every day, teaching them about the issues that are going on, mentoring young people, working with kids, how to cook. It's always kind of been this element. So, I mean, at the time, it really stung to be told, don't waste the paper on your teaching application.
Right, right.
But I've found ways to scratch that itch
since
then in very different ways.
I think that's so true. Teaching does not necessarily have to be in that formalized setting. It can be in a more generalized way.
And let's be real, I'd be like completely unfocused in a classroom.
Yeah, that's right. Look what's out the window.
Yeah. Oh, guys, let's all look at that bird out on the playground.
That's right.
It's eating a cheesy.
So just based on the rest of our conversation, I'm assuming that you were at Camp Kwanis again for a couple of years.
Yep, 2 years. Almost exactly to the day.
And then what happened after that 2 year mark?
Well, this is where it gets a little sad. Okay. You ready for some sad time?
I'm okay. Yes, okay. I'm preparing myself.
So in July of last year, my aunt and my uncle were killed in a car accident.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so the summertime was my downtime. And so it was easy to deal with the summer, but then as it got closer to outdoor school time, it was quite obvious that I wasn't capable of handling it just with the grief and depression and all of that stuff. So, I actually stepped away from the position, and my boss at Camp Kwanis is one of my dearest friends. And so we just had a very real talk, and I said, I cannot do this. I thought I could, and I just cannot. And so he was really helpful in allowing me to step away and make that happen. And then I moved back into the city and worked part-time just to be able to have something to get up for every day, and painted shoes.
I want to get to these. I want to get to these painted shoes because there's some on the table here in front of me. But I think another call out here, once again, having that great mentor in your life to realize, like, yeah, I know you need to take some time away. Mm-hmm. This is not the best situation to be in. I guess I'm more interested though about your aunt and uncle. Apparently, you were close with them.
Yeah, my aunt was my second mom, and she was the one that taught me how to paint. She was a sign maker, and my mom and my aunt and grandma all had a sign business.
So signs is like traffic signs or
like painted cars. She'd do hand lettering. She'd do business signs. So like the ones that are hanging outside businesses, golf course, like for golf tournaments, signs of any kind.
Yeah.
And so growing up, we always, during the summer, got to hang out at my grandma's acreage, which was where they had the business. And my aunt would let me just buzz around her and just watch over her shoulder while she was doing her hand lettering. And it was just, it was so cool to, starting in like grade one, we'd get pulled out of school in June to paint Stampede windows, which is the greatest coloring book a kid could ever have. My aunt would paint the outlines, and she'd say, pick a color, and then you just got to paint on windows. And it was so much fun. And that was kind of my first like real painting. And we got paid, and like we got to hang out with our family, and it was really, really fun. And then she was one of the few people in Calgary at the time doing hand lettering. So she'd do, and pinstriping for vehicles.
Right. Yeah.
So just even knowing that there was different ways to make letters was like the coolest thing ever. So I'd go grab my pen and my markers and my paper and try to make my letters just like hers, which was really like, as grade one, the teacher is trying to teach you how to write, and you're like, no, I got this. Yeah. You make an H like this.
Right. Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. I do not need your help.
You know, I think about that every so often about like the different fonts that are on a computer. It's like someone designed this at some point. They went through every letter and had to make it look very similar.
There's a very riveting documentary on Helvetica.
Oh, I've heard about this. I've not seen it, but yeah, I've heard about this.
I think it was on Netflix for a while, but like it talks about how, someone designed it and it's like an actual thing, and just how everybody uses it.
And everyone has an opinion on fonts.
Yes,
so.
Yes. If I get anything with Comic Sans, I will just
flip this table.
Yeah, just done. We are not, this conversation's over.
Right. So you're working part-time. What makes you then transition to designing shoes?
I was trying to be aunt of the year.
Okay, all right.
I have a three-year-old nephew, and we were taking a family trip to Disneyland.
Oh, nice.
And he, at the time, before Paw Patrol came along, was obsessed with Mater from Cars.
Of course, yeah.
And it was right before Cars 3 came out, so they had pulled all the merchandise for Cars, and you couldn't find anything because they were about to relaunch all of it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I know how to draw things. I'll just paint him some shoes. And he just, like, he was walking. And so I, for Christmas, before our trip to Disneyland, mm-hmm. I painted him these Mater shoes. I had pneumonia and I was just sitting in my house painting right. these shoes. So spent a lot of time on them. And then we went to California and it was the rainiest California winter in 50 years.
Okay.
So we were stuck inside our condo, and I told my mom, like, had I not had pneumonia and been exhausted for a month, I wanted to paint everybody a pair of shoes. And she's like, well, the Vans outlet is right down the road. Let's go get some paint, and you can paint all of us a pair of shoes. And so for the week before my brother and sister-in-law arrived in California, I would draw the shoes while we were driving around California in the car. I don't get car sick, so
that's
a nice benefit. I'd draw the shoes and then paint them at night. And then when they arrived, everybody got a pair of shoes. So
this is a technical question, but what are you using to draw onto the shoes first?
Usually, if it's a white shoe, a pencil. Okay. If it's a black shoe, then a chalk pencil.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Quilters have these chalk pencils.
Yeah.
They're great because they're like really sharp.
And then what type of paint are you actually using to paint onto the shoes?
At that time, I was using a craft paint with a fabric additive. But now I've started using Angelus paint. It's made for leather and it sticks on like any kind of shoe. So you can do canvas shoes like the Vans. You can do running shoes. Like Nikes and stuff. And then you can do cleats, which are a little bit more plastic. So,
right. And I'm assuming then that this is treated so that if there's a little bit of water, of course, it's not just going to wash off the first.
Yeah, no, it's completely waterproof. It's very much like the paint they use in factories.
Yeah.
So it's completely waterproof and I treat it. So it's sealed everything. These shoes that are completely painted, you can put water in the shoe and it wouldn't come out. Like like watertight. So it's like a little scuba shoe.
I know. I'm going to take some pictures of these after we're done here so I can put them up on like Instagram and Twitter and stuff afterwards. So it's too bad that this is just an audio-only program. Let me see if I can... I'm going to rub that and see if you can hear that. But describe this one that I'm holding here right
now. Yeah, so that one's a Jack Skellington mm-hmm. and Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas. And that was a grade 9 grad present for a family friend.
Oh,
and
nice. Do they know yet?
Oh, yeah. She graduated a year ago. So I stole them back.
Right,
I've been doing a couple markets in the last little while. So she was like, I'm probably not going to wear these because it's spring now. So take them.
Yeah. And then we have this second one here, kind of a teal color. I guess you could say they're beach balls. I like it because of being the Mac fanboy that I am.
It kind of looks like the Wheel of Death, doesn't
the
it?
The Wheel of Death, yeah.
Yeah, with a little shiny gold in there to
that's
make
right.
it a little happier. I have been obsessed with color wheels lately. I don't know why. Yeah. And this was actually a pair I had messed up. And
oh, really?
I try not to mess them up, obviously, but this was like I was doing a pair for a girl going on a Make-A-Wish cruise, mm-hmm. and of course, that's the pair I messed up, then like just had like this panic attack and was like, I gotta start these again, and so I like left them and ran to the Vans store and bought another pair. So these underneath have a really terrible Ariel on them from Little Mermaid.
Okay, gotcha.
But I managed to save them and paint over them, but. Yeah, it was. it's too bad that they're not my size because I would absolutely wear these ones.
I was saying the same thing. I would absolutely not fit into those shoes. And then this last one here, we have the word. It's in black and gold. We have it says Notorious on the side.
Yeah,
who are these for?
Those are for Josh, my hairstylist.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, his salon's called Notorious. He's in Inglewood here in Calgary. Mm-hmm. And first time I went to him, he cut my hair and he was like, what do you do? Just kind of chit chat. And I was like, oh, I custom paint sneakers. And he was like, let's do it. Like right away. He was like, you do? Like, let's do it. How much do I owe you? Like, I was okay, we can do this. So painted these for him. And again, I got a haircut last week and he was like, you're doing a market, take them. So very supportive.
That's really cool that you find those supportive people like that. What we glossed over here is, of course, you're in Disneyland. You've discovered like maybe there's a market for this. What makes you go from that to being like, I'm going to start my own business?
Yeah. So I posted them on just my personal Instagram and Facebook, I think. And then people who I'm friends with were like, how do we get those? Will you paint us pairs? And then it just kind of kept going and going and going. And there was always someone asking for a pair. And then I was like, okay, well, I mean, I'm working part-time. This is a kind of a nice way to supplement a part-time income. And there was some months actually where I ended up making more from shoes than working part-time, which was awesome. So that was the nod I needed to say, oh, this isn't just a gift for my family. Like this is going to be kind of for everyone. So yeah, I, shortly after that in December of last year, I got asked to paint two pairs of cleats for NFL players, which was,
whoa. So yeah. How do you know how that happened? Like how did the grapevine go to NFL players?
So it's kind of like completely random story, but so Classroom Champions is based here in Calgary. It's an organization run by Steve Messler, who was an Olympic bobsledder. And he brings Olympians into classrooms as mentors. And throughout the school year, they talk with the kids and all of that stuff. He has had two mentors on the Buffalo Bills. And during week 13 of the NFL season, the players are allowed to have customized cleats. It's as long as they're supporting a charity or showcasing an organization of some kind. So these two players said to Steve, we're going to do Classroom Champion shoes. Can we do that? And Steve was like, yeah, absolutely. He talks to his communications people here in town. And Leo Perez, who's phenomenal, she designed these cleats for the players with the Classroom Champions branding and everything on them. Mm-hmm. And everybody was on board. So Leo went to Longview Leather, which is where I buy my paint at. And just, she was like, there's a lot of steps to this. The guys out there said, oh, just call Stacy. She'll do it, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she contacted me through Instagram, and I was kind of like, Russian troll. Like, this is like, I was like, this is not real. Like, my first instinct was like, what? Like, no.
I've had actually a few legitimate business dealings through like Instagram chat, but every time the first thing is like, I don't know who this person is. This is obviously a bot.
Yeah.
Has to be.
Yeah. Like, I for sure thought she was a bot, but then it got like very specific very quickly, and she mentioned people I knew, and I was like, this is either a really good bot or this is real. And so we met up, and she gave me the shoes, and I cleared my calendar. My parents took my dog for four days, and I locked myself in the basement and painted these cleats. And when the cleats arrived, they handed me this box that was half the size of my couch cushion.
Wow.
Like, they were a size 16 boot. And, like, I'm not even doing it justice. Like, it was the biggest shoe I've ever seen in my life.
It's like the side of beef that they're giving
to you. And they're like, paint this. And it was really cool. So that pair was blue. One was blue and the other was lighter blue, and then had sort of the resilience and leadership and the things that Classroom Champions really champions, I guess. And the other one, Colton Schmidt, I think is his name. He was a kicker. So his shoe was like a soccer shoe, which was like, this is a much more normal size shoe. And he had got his kids in the classroom to sign his shoe.
Oh, nice.
But they had used like a Sharpie paint pen, which comes off easily. So I had to go over all of these tiny little kid signatures with a tiny little brush and paint them and put the logo on them and send them back. So I did the two pairs in 4 days. They said it's a bit of a rush. And I said, yeah, that's totally doable. Like, I used to work at a camp. I'm used to staying up all night working on things. Like, I can get this done. And so it was right down to the last minute to get them photographed and shipped so that the players had them for the game. And so I hosted a Super Bowl party.
Which, love it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of puns and wordplay. So Super Bowl Sunday was December 3rd. And then that was kind of like, that's how Bigfoot Custom Shoes started. That was like the official, okay, like, if people are going to see these, like, I want them to see like an actual company, not just Stacy who paints shoes in her basement.
Sure, sure. Bigfoot Custom Shoes, that's the official name of the business. Yeah.
I went by Bigfoot at camp. We had camp names out there. Mm-hmm. And so after leaving my job, this kind of let me still be Bigfoot, which was was really nice. Yeah.
So how's it been so far then?
It's been great. I love it. It's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, I could do this forever. And mm-hmm. I've started painting jean jackets as well and customizing all sorts of things for people. But it's always so fun for me to see people get their shoes and to see that moment where they're like, oh, you totally got me, or you totally get it. Like, my love language is a gift giver. I don't know if you know the five love languages, but I'm completely in the receiving and giving gifts mm-hmm. section. So this is kind of like yelling my love language at people, like, here, this is for you. Love it. Love me.
That's right. It's like, is it just you still, or do you have staff?
Yeah, no, it's just me. I do all of it, or try to do all of it. But it's been there's been a lot of lessons in the creative business side of it, because I'm so right brained that putting on that left brain thing is just it's difficult for me to, you know, remember to invoice people and and have work orders, and I'd rather just like draw something on a piece of paper and send a picture to them. But just having those processes, even though I fight them, has been probably the biggest lesson for me. And yeah, like everybody's been really supportive, and just like I haven't been burned at all, which is which is really nice, because
you're still in that small business space, so it's a little bit more humanity, I think, is involved.
Yeah,
with that.
And just everybody's been really understanding, and which has been really cool, especially during this past year, just kind of myself recovering. It's been nice to be able to think things through and paint and put it out there. So,
is this a business that you are comfortable just keeping it's small right now, or do you want to grow this as big as it can go?
I definitely want to grow it. There's a lot of opportunity out there for people who customize shoes. And like right now I've done just a lot of Vans. I've done the cleats, but I definitely want to get into doing like the Jordans and stuff, where they're a little bit bigger and people are kind of willing to pay a little bit more and have a little bit more fun with it, and do maybe a couple of sneaker conventions and stuff, which are really cool. I just watched this series of videos called Ace of Customs.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen.
No.
So basically they get three people in to paint shoes.
Oh, wow.
They have 5 hours to paint a pair of shoes on a theme.
Then
you can win Ace of Customs. So they do that at sneaker cons and stuff. So I'm hoping one day I've emailed them saying like, how do you do this?
Well, fingers crossed that there's something that comes of that.
I'm excited.
I mean, sneaker culture right now, I know, is growing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a mall for many years. So is it Mondays that there's new sneakers, or is it Tuesdays?
I think it's Tuesdays.
Yeah. Tuesdays when new sneakers
on
are
on drop day. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! Like there's a lineup outside of every like Sport Check and all the other places that they know where those shoes are going to come in for.
Yeah, and like I'm not super big into sneaker shoes. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of like pretty girl shoes.
Sure. Yeah.
But the sneaker side of it is something I'm totally just learning as well, which is really cool.
Yeah.
That's been a learning, and just following people on Instagram, and there's a lot of sneaker culture stuff happening on Instagram, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So
it seems like the new place that I find out about things anymore.
Everything I learn is from Instagram.
Yeah. Thanks, social media overlords.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, just having talked with you, it sounds like you don't necessarily worry so much about the future, but is there a future goal you have in mind, or is there like, sometimes people do have 5-year plans, that anything that
five-year plans?
I know.
I mean, we work in 2-year increments. I think we've made that very clear.
Exactly.
I don't, you know, like it's just, especially this past year, it's just been such a day at a time thing with dealing with this grief and, you know, going to counselor appointments and all of that stuff. It's just been for sure like one day at a time. And this has just been like, this has been the perfect remedy for that, because I can paint a pair of shoes in a day, which is awesome, and get it done. But like thinking about the future, I think I always want to do this. And if it gets bigger, it gets bigger. And I work on contract right now, so I'm pretty flexible with like, if this does get bigger, I'm able to kind of jump ship.
Of course.
I always do the mental math where I'm like, how many pairs of shoes do I have to make to not have to work part-time?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like, how many is it? And so I'm always kind of doing that math. And I'm sure I could make a spreadsheet.
Yeah, exactly.
My dad's an accountant. I feel like I need to be able to make a spreadsheet.
Right. But then you
But then I could paint and be more it's more fun.
Exactly. It's like, let's work with spreadsheets later.
Yeah.
Let's do the fun stuff first. What advice do you have for other entrepreneurs out there that might be in a similar boat, that they're creating stuff, but they don't know how to kind of flip that switch? And really, this is basic advice for any entrepreneur like me, too. It's like, what would you tell people?
I think just be real about who you are and what you're able to do. I think if it's beyond your capability to do something, people understand that. And I think people, in my experience, have been understanding in that. So yeah, like, and getting those processes in place, I think from the outset, I think is a lot easier than figuring it out while you're in the middle of the process, right? Like, I've been using Asana to like, make sure that I have all my steps because I don't want to like miss a step on each thing. Just putting the processes in place, I think, is super important. That's my biggest advice. But just being yourself. That's, I think everybody I've met who's an entrepreneur wants to share something that they have with the world. And everybody who's an artist wants to share something that they have with the world. Whether it's painting or whether it's designing a computer program, it comes from you. And that's the most important part of being a small business to me is, is just being yourself. And like, some people look at the shoes and they're like, oh, they're just like sneakers. And it's like, well, no, like, I use very tiny little brushes and I hand paint everything. I don't stencil anything, but it's me. Like, this is me putting myself into these shoes. And
I think it definitely shows for sure.
And
I think the other big thing that you just called out there that I've been definitely noticing here as well is there's still that perception that's out there that's like, I'm a businessman and I do business things and I just think about money all day long. And I think that the most successful, at least here in Calgary, the most successful people I've run across are those people who do keep it like, no, this is me. I'm just being myself. And this is why I think you should drink my craft beer or come to my coffee shop or buy my shoes, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like the guys who are doing that and the women that are doing that, like, I am really into coffee. Come share that with me is like the coolest invitation. And like, seeing someone wear my, it's happened one time where I ran across a pair of shoes I've seen like in the wild, like it was a spotting, and I was like, that's really cool.
That is
like
cool.
To be a part of someone's day where she was out with her kids having a good time, like, I was like, oh, that is like, that was so cool that it's actually being worn. People are like, they're so precious, you spend so much time on them. But I just want people to wear them. Like, my nephew wore his shoes for like 8 months straight every day on the playground, and they held up. And so people are like, oh, they're not precious. Yeah. They're meant to be worn. They're meant to show the world who you are. And I think that's what everybody's just trying to do. So
yeah, this is not a couch that needs to be under plastic all day long. It's something to actually be utilized.
Yeah. My dog spilled red paint on my leather. I have a leather couch.
Yeah.
I moved into my aunt and uncle's house, so it was their couch. But this is a side story. Sorry. We were going for an emotional wrap up.
But that's all right.
I have to talk about my dog. I paint at my coffee table watching TV because my dog absolutely refuses to go down in my basement where my studio is.
Right.
So I've had to like haul everything up and she just won't go downstairs. And she's a lab, so her tail is like insane. And she hit a red bottle of paint and caused basically a murder scene in my family room on my leather couch.
Oh,
and it's
boy.
Leather paint, so it won't come off. So my mom's like, well, I guess you're going to splatter paint your couch now.
Yeah.
So
tie-dye couch or
something
like that.
There's like this red splotch on it, and that's Schaefer's spot.
That's right. Well, Stacey, thank you so much for coming out here and talking with me here today. This has been a lot of fun. Just so that people can, if they want to, is there a quick and easy way that people can find you online if they want to check out your stuff?
For sure. I'm mostly on Instagram, Bigfoot Custom Shoes, all one word. And I have a website that is not launched yet, but I have a landing page, which was a big accomplishment.
Yes, yes.
BigfootCustomShoes.com. And I'm on Facebook as well if they look up Bigfoot Custom Shoes.
Nice.
Yeah. Perfect. And I think I pop up in Google. I don't know if I've done all that stuff properly yet. But
who knows how the internet works, yeah, really?
Yeah. Instagram's their best bet.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I can highly recommend just having seen these here right now. So go get some shoes. Everyone's walking.
Yeah. So. May as well make it look cool.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So good, right? Thanks so much for listening. If you were listening in the launch week, you were able to hear these first three episodes all at once. If you liked what you heard, please let somebody know about it. Text your friends or post on social media. Tag at MediaLabYYC if you do, which, by the way, is how you can follow myself and know about all the news at Media Lab. We're at MediaLabYYC on every social media platform that currently exists, except for Pinterest. You know what you did. I certainly appreciate your support. We'll talk very soon. Have a great day.